The wagon pulled through the street to the southern district before grinding to a halt yet again. Another line of people were crossing the road, merging with a crowd, moving off the bridge from Pleasure Dune. "Is there nowhere to vote on Doom?" asked Nathan. Nia shook her head as the wagon pulled off again, slowly this time, as people seemed to be unconcerned with paying attention to the roads on election day. "Figures," muttered Nathan. "Does it?" asked Balasar, looking out of the smallest slatted window near him. "What do you mean?"
"I don't see why they couldn't have opened a polling station on Pleasure Dune. It's not as if anyone who didn't already live there wouldn't go and vote. Why not make them feel like their voice matters?"
Nia nodded her head but said nothing. Overhead, a floating train pulled itself through a large fork, coasting towards the river and the bridge to Pleasure Dune, before suddenly turning left.
"What do you think?" "I don't know what to think, Nathan. It's been a long few weeks."
They all nodded at that. Outside, more people were pouring into the Southern District Plaza as the wagon kept crawling through the streets of Tarthage.
"Did everyone remember to vote, at least?" Balasar asked, still staring out onto the street.
Nathan and Nia exchanged glances but said nothing. The Dragonborn sighed as the wagon tilted right and began moving quicker now, the crowds thinning out the further they got from the centre of the district.
"Where did we go wrong?"
Hey, I'm Tom.
And I'm Stuart.
And we're from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
We talk about all things connected to D&D lore.
And we're on the Robots Radio Network. So if you're into Dungeons & Dragons or you're into lore, then come check us out. You can find us on any podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts.
Roll more dice.
That's the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
The three of them stepped out of the wagon and quickly found their way through the white marble halls of the hospital, with Nia's expert guidance, of course, till they reached Yannia Scribe's room. Nia went in first, followed by Nathan and Balasar, who removed his hat.
"Blimey, we're getting the band back together, are we, eh?"
came a familiar roar from across the bed. The shades on the blinds were tightly drawn, and as her eyes adjusted to the darkness, Nia could see that one wall had been drawn in thick black ink. Books littered every available surface, including most of the bed, apart from a small bunch of covers near the foot where there was a dwarf-sized nest.
"Nia, do my eyes actually deceive me, or is this in the flesh?"
Nia quickly cut in, looking up at the wall.
"You've been ignoring doctor's orders. No time for all that now. The fate of democracy might rest in our hands, and you, too,"
he pointed to Balasar and Nathan with a sly smile, "might just have butter fingers." Balasar opened his mouth to speak before Scribe burst out laughing, clapping his hands together. The colour had returned to his cheeks, and Nia noted that there was no longer a vat of blood beside his bed.
"So, for the past week or so, Yannia Scribe here has been doing some digging," explained Nia. "Hey, they'd know that if they actually came to visit. Besides, I found a little more than I think any of us was expecting.
So anyway, who knows the story of the Dulac Moss?" Scribe asked the room as the rest of them shifted books to sit down on the bed. Balasar went to move a large bottle filled with yellow liquid before deciding to stand.
Sherman told us, me and Nia, the night you, stabbed. That's no grudge, Nathan. Nia told me he almost jumped off the roof from me, and it was Balasar that got me to the healer. I mean, you both could have bought me some grapes, but, well, we'll call it even, eh?"
He met Nathan's eyes for a moment and nodded. "Anyway, that ship, the one Sherman's father was on? Well, it wasn't. I know, because I've got the shipping log." He rummaged through a few books and held up an ancient-looking leather-bound tome.
"But do you know who was on that ship?"
They shook their heads.
"Lucius Everstill."
"What?
Everstill as in father to the golden boy serial killer, Art Everstill?" Now, Lucius Everstill used to be in the military, but nearly all his files anyway are still classified, which makes tracing him hard. But no, he did serve. Yeah, over the Black Mountains, actually, years and years ago, before Art was born, blurted out Nathan, remembering the conversation he'd had with the electoral hopeful. Indeed, Nathan. But did you know that the Dulac Moss was a slave ship? It was transporting slaves over from the Black Mountains the long way, as in, you know, shipping them around and down the river instead of going over them. The Carthage military used to provide protection for such services. So, the Dulac Moss was notorious in the military at the time, mainly for the crew, apparently. Lots of very important people served on that boat before they became important people. Lucius was just one of them. Who were the others? Asked Nathan. Well, among them was Frederick Oakbow, as in Grand Premier Oakbow's brother. He flicked through the book again. Several members of the big banking families. You get the picture. Anyway, word was that on the way back from their slave runs, they'd get a little handsy with some of the slaves. The women. Nathan's head fell as Nia scowled. Aye, there's a reason you don't hear about Art Everstill's mother too much. Anyway, Nia sighed. Okay, so Lucius and his mates back in the day, they get a rep for, well, doing bad things to slaves on their way back to port, and no one does anything. They all go legit, and what then? Well, actually, someone did try to do something. On the ship's last trip back to Carthage, someone tipped off old Lucius that there was a court-martial waiting for him. Well, for him and his friends back at port. And wouldn't you know it, the ship sank, said Balasar. Scribe nodded. Aye. Lucius Everstill was among a handful of survivors, all of whom escaped the court-martial on lack of evidence. They fell silent before Nathan spoke up. So, does this link into Morthos? Scribe smiled before reaching for another book. It took me a while. I've done a lot of reading. Our case files, they were bang on. They were too bang on. We were being sold a line. Balasar, your book learning was great, but we were being played. We were playing right into it. Scribe gestured to the wall, where they could now make out various religious symbols of Hyandai. We looked everywhere we should have, because we'd been chasing him the whole time if we stopped. Well, Panjid Oshok, he knew what was happening. He held up a large, familiar-looking notebook from the crime scene where they found the religious leader skinned. Did any of you actually read this? One by one, they shook their heads. Hey, no, I didn't either, not in the moment. Too busy running off to MIC. If we'd looked, though, we might have seen that Panjid Oshok knew Morthos was absolutely and totally full of shit. Skinwalker knew as much about Hyandai as I do. Well, as I did. Dragonscript, it's tough, Balasar, I'll give you that. But once you've learnt it, well, you recognise the patterns. Nia covered her mouth as Scribe shifted some papers and then began to read aloud. I'm about to die, but this dark elf knows nothing of Hyandai. He speaks with false tongues. His understanding of ascension is worse than a lie. It is the most pervasive butchery of Hyandai. He is not all that he seems. Scribe looked up. Someone has been playing us from the start. But why? Asked Nathan. Because he's broke. He's not a fucking gold to his name. That's why Lucius Everstill has been introducing in rich business people to his friends in government and taking a cut of the money for himself. Running a political campaign made for the perfect cover. And what's the perfect cover for a nice big crime? An even bigger one, replied Nathan. Sorry, you're saying that Lucius Everstill has orchestrated a series of high-profile murders to cover for the fact that the government is laundering illegal funds through legitimate businesses? Asked Nia, almost incredulously. Prove it, said Balasar. It wasn't a challenge. Nathan and Nia knew that's what a judge would ask. Yeah, prove it, okay. I followed the money. You said your boy, Alwyn Hundricks, MIC, he was talking about interested parties in government, huh? Nia nodded. Well, do you know that every single one of them was either on or knew someone that was on the Dulac Moss? Balasar nodded this time, walking forward and eyeing the various books with his hands clasped in front of him. I don't know, Yanea. We still can't properly link Morthos to Lucius. At this point, it doesn't matter, Balasar. Morthos is dead, and he may have just been a part of whatever this is. We can't change that. We can make sure that Lucius, and maybe Art as well, don't get away with it. Now, we don't have real proof for much of what I've told you. I mean, it's a lot of it's conjecture, but the money laundering, ha ha, that sticks. We can bring them in at least. We can get ahead of them. See the whites of their eyes, eh? Smiled Nathan, stretching his arms above his head. Hey, something like that. This has been Tales of Tarthage. This episode was written and edited by Samuel Bradley. The title music was Who Am I to Complain by Alec Michael Wilson. Extra sounds were provided by Zapsplat.com. This was a Starter Set Studio production.
Do you like adventure?
Yeah.
Do you like laughing?
Yeah.
Would you like to listen to a group of people you don't know play D&D and reference retro pop culture you vaguely remember? Excellent. You're going to love Committee Quest. We play D&D in the world of Amarin. We use adventure modules and supplements made by people in the community. We also have a sweet synthwave backing track. Come and join us on our adventure. Volume 1 has been completed. Volume 2 coming the end of January. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts from.